Hello, everybody. I'm here to introduce Natixis Asia Research Flagship Report. It's about aging in Asia. We chose this topic because although everybody knows actually that the number of countries in Asia are aging, and the most obvious case is Japan. We've been discussing it for years. Increasingly China, but also South Korea. Even Thailand is aging very rapidly, let alone Taiwan, Hong Kong. I mean, all of that aging is in a way hardly discussed, except for Japan. I mean, and in a way we think because we know countries are aging, there are no consequences for that aging. And there are massive consequences, and not only the obvious one. The obvious one is that the labor supply grows negatively. And, you know, we economists know that that's an input to production, and thus if something grows negatively, it'll be harder to grow. But that's a very simplistic way to look at aging. There's a number of interactions that we look into in our report that are worth noting. The first and most important one is the relation between aging and labor productivity. Do you become more or less productive when you age? Depending on how you answer that question, and by the way, there's no silver bullet because some countries actually become more productive and others less productive. But depending on how you answer that question, interestingly, your growth prospects will be quite different, because if you become more productive, the impact of aging on potential growth, so on long-term growth, might be much less, even positive eventually, if your productivity increases massively. So it's a huge question. And then the key issue is why some countries become more productive and others become less productive. I have to say, most countries become less productive. So the key objective of our report is to draw those lessons to actually talk about a silver lining, meaning how to age rather than why we age, because that's in a way, you know, unavoidable, or at least it's very hard to change a country's aging profile, because you need many, many years to revert that trend. So we focus more pragmatically on how to make aging more of a positive than a negative to a certain extent. And to answer that question, I'm going to bring my team in. First, Trinh Nguyen is going to talk about the region as such, or at least the countries in the region which are aging, and she's going to go through, you know, differences across those countries. Then we're going to hear Koji Iwahara, by the way. He's going to talk about Japan and the lessons to be drawn by the front runner of aging globally. And then Jiang Weishu is going to talk about China's aging and why it actually differs somewhat from Japan, which I think is very important. And finally, Gary Eng and Junju Tan are going to talk about sectoral issues regarding aging. So think about, you know, why some sectors may do better than others in aging economies. This is particularly important for investors, or even, of course, manufacturers or providers of services when they need to choose which countries to operate in. And then finally, there's going to be a little bit of the consequences of aging on public finances, both in the case of Japan and China, and also the sectoral underpinning of the financial or public finance consequences of aging, again, from the perspective of an investor. I leave it here and I pass the floor to the team. Thank you.
Hello, my name is Trinh Nguyen, Senior Economist for Natixis. Many Asian economies will age very rapidly in the next several decades, including Hong Kong, Japan, mainland China, Singapore, South Korea, Taiwan, and Thailand. Their working age population peak, and then they're going to have a decline at a much accelerated rate in the coming decades, especially countries like South Korea. And by 2050, the share of the elderly population in these economies are expected to increase from a staggering 7% in 1985 to 27% of total. So that's a huge increase. So we're having a decline in working age population and a rise of elderly population. And these two factors have a huge implication on potential outlook for these economies and also the sectoral composition of that growth. So why is this important? It's important because demographics is one of the key inputs and a key predictor for potential growth in the future. Reduced labor supply creates a drag on growth. It can be mitigated by higher labor participation, capital investment, and policies that address these policy. But it is very difficult, as we know from the example of Japan, that has aged much more rapidly and ahead of most of Asian and developed economies. Because with fewer workers and increased elderly population, we need more savings to sustain their spending in retirement. And that puts a lot of pressure on public finances, health systems, and even private savings. So an economy needs to be prepared for this while it's still youthful if it wants to age gracefully. So there are two implications here. One is the fact that lower potential output, assuming everything else is equal, and also a stress on certain sectors of the economy. So we look at whether or not an economy is prepared to age, right? We look at things like external savings, such as net IIP, net international investment positions, GDP per capita, which means where they are now. And so you want to be at a higher per capita when you age, because if you're at a lower end, that means you need to grow very rapidly, and to grow very rapidly when you're already aged is much more difficult because your factor endowment is not favorable for rapid growth rates. So when we look at all these different factors and pension systems, we see that Thailand is worse positioned, while Singapore and Taiwan and South Korea are more prepared. And when we look at other economies, such as Japan, we see that even aging at a high income per capita, it is much difficult to raise productivity because productivity tends to slow, and you have larger employment in sectors that are pretty much less productive. And also elderly people, although they can work longer and you can raise their labor participation, they tend to be more risk averse, so they're not likely to move around to fit the labor market. So the question we have is there a silver lining for this? Of course there is. There is a silver lining because we can learn from the lessons of Japan on what needs to be done to then defy gravity and to offset of this through productivity. And the second one is that there is also a silver lining because the case of Japan shows that there are sectors that are going to do well, right? Sectors such as healthcare, robotics, graying population, lifestyles that fit these elderly people. And moreover, demand for certain areas will also much increase. So just what I mentioned, which is the pension systems, financial management, especially in the downward suppression of growth and interest rates environment that cause these economies to need to seek for diversification and yield. And that is a question that is not just pertinent in a structural longer term, but also now, as we look at how these economies cope with COVID by dipping into these important savings in the pension system, and by doing so to mitigate the decline of output and income during COVID, they're also dipping into their future consumption. And therefore, for Asia, this is a huge risk factor to look for, but that itself has a silver lining.
This is Kohei in Tokyo, and I would like to present that Japan's experience shows that productivity slows with an aging population and high income. Over the decades, with an increasing demand for healthcare services, employment in this sector has accelerated and became the third largest sector in total employment. The problem is that productivity in healthcare has been fallen, which in turn reduced productivity at a macro level. Of course, the government has introduced policies to increase the potential growth. For example, revised the labor law by raising the retirement age to 65. For sure, this increased the potential growth, but it lasted only for a short period because the number of people retiring increased at a higher speed. What is more important for potential growth is the total factor productivity, which has fallen over the past decade. In a nutshell, meaningful structural reforms are essential. They include labor market reform to ease labor mobility to high productive sectors such as IT and finance. Still, the challenges with the aging population is that middle and senior citizens will be better heard during elections, which is well known as a silver democracy in Japan. Naturally, they will be opposed to revisions in the labor law, which will lose their production as a full-time employee. From the broader perspective, intergenerational issues have intensified. In fact, senior generations are more concerned with healthcare and pensions, while the younger generations favor childcare and education. So, with a tight fiscal position, more resources will be allocated to healthcare and pension at the expense of childcare and education. Clearly, this will in turn increase the challenges to reverse the aging population and to increase the potential growth. Now, I would like to conclude here by saying that Japan will lose vibrancy with few structural reforms. I hope you enjoy our report. Thank you.
Hello, this is Jian Wei. Population aging has become an important aspect when analyzing China's long-term growth rate. The issue is becoming more important in the future. The direct impact of aging is the slower growth in labor input, which is a key component of China's growth. However, based on our estimation, the impact from labor input due to population aging is limited by itself. Also, China could raise its retirement age to mitigate the impact of aging on labor market. What is actually more important is the indirect impact, namely whether the reduction in labor input leads to lower productivity. While many associate the reduction in labor supply with lower productivity, there are ways to cushion the impact. For example, economic transformation toward more capital-intensive activities. The key for China is how to raise its productivity to support growth against the backdrop of population aging. This requires efficient innovation, with robots being the best example. Another consequence of population aging is the increase in fiscal expenditure and public debt. Given that China has increased public debt over the past few years, population aging is going to further weigh on China's fiscal condition. As such, the sustainability of China's public finance is a key issue. Having said that, China still owns large savings, and this could be a supporting factor. All in all, population aging will be an important issue for China, not only for its labor market, but for a number of issues such as productivity and fiscal condition, which will be key for its economic growth in the future.
I'm Gary Ng, covering economic and sectoral research for Asia Pacific at NetEase's. While the aging economies are likely to face tougher pressure with weaker labor productivity, this relationship is not really written in stone. Hence, I'm going to use Japan's experience to show the implication of an aging economy for the world. To begin with, the silver economy has clearly moved towards a stronger emphasis on healthcare on the demand side, as well as robotics and e-commerce on the supply side. In Japan, the potential in healthcare is shown by the higher share of spending growing from 5.8% of GDP in 1990 to 11% in 2019. And beyond this, ICT and industrial sectors have expanded business links with healthcare. Some of the well-known firms such as Canon, Fujifilm, Nikon, and Olympus has all acquired firms and integrated their own technologies to create healthcare-related products. However, price control could put a limit to the potential. Given the ongoing rapid aging in Japan, the policy may indeed be necessary from a public expenditure perspective, but this will also put a ceiling somehow to corporate revenue. With a shrinking working population, Japanese firms have opted for expanding overseas production and driving innovation on robotics. As a result, Japan has become the forerunner in producing robots to compensate for this lower availability of workers in the domestic market. The four largest Japanese producers for industrial robots now make up close to half of the global market share, and this shows this significant role in driving productivity through automation. With fewer consumers and workers, department stores and convenience stores in Japan have started to scale back on physical stores and opening hours. And looking internally, part of the solution is to replace physical stores with online sales. The good news is the aging population is now embracing digitalization. The internet usage rate for the silver population has ballooned compared to a decade ago. Such trend shows that e-commerce will be an irreversible trend with the higher internet usage across all age groups, especially after the pandemic. Next, we also find consumer pattern has diverged between the youth and the elderly, but the impact on finance, automobile, and lifestyle is likely to stay neutral. With a shift of consumption pattern and growing expenditure for healthcare, the demand of finance in individual and corporate pension and investment services is going to edge higher to ensure this financial ability to age gracefully. Asset under management for Japanese pension funds has expanded 5 times between 2010 and 2019. And investors have also opted for discretionary asset management with more allocation towards equities and others as well as foreign investment, and this will bring new opportunities for financial services. While many analysts may be rather pessimistic on car sales, we see reasonable support as there is a strong preference for the elderly in Japan to continue to drive if their physical condition allows. And with more free time after retirement, the elderly indeed has more time to spend for enjoyment and lifestyle. This is going to bring new changes to travel industry, which is by far the most popular hobbies for the elderly, as well as housing and electric device to upgrade on their lifestyle. In contrast, insurance, communication, and education could face higher pressure. The shift in demographics in more elderly population could indeed have a negative impact on the demand of insurance from an earlier stage of life. The trend towards unmarried population and families with fewer children could also impact the incentive of getting insured. Still, opportunities exist in medical care and retirement savings. The awareness of the youth generation in anticipating better lifestyle and medical care when getting old will also continue to be supportive. On communication and education, the elderly simply tends to spend less as a total share of total spending. And therefore, it is quite certain that aging will exert pressure on growth. But the right sectorial specialization may indeed mitigate the impact. In Japan's case, the high demand in healthcare, the ongoing investment on robotics, as well as overseas investment has paid off. However, this may not be the only path the world can enter in an aging society. Next, Junior Tan will discuss further an alternative path that Taiwan has taken, as well as with more details on robotics, which seems to be increasingly important for the future world development.
Gary has walked us through the sectors that may benefit from the changes in consumer behavior within a silvering economy such as Japan. And that is from the demand side. I'll focus more on the supply side with the example of Taiwan and basically how the right sectoral specialization can mitigate the impact of aging on productivity growth. In fact, the productivity growth of Taiwan in the past 5 years has been driven mostly by multi-factor productivity, or the so-called TFP, while the direct contribution from labor or capital has been declining. And this is particularly evident for the ICT sector. The key reason behind is that the heavy investment in R&D, with Taiwan ranking the third in R&D expenditure globally. And when we looked into the sources of these R&D expenditure, we can see that the corporate sector is playing a more active role in the R&D expenditure beyond government supports, which is a good sign, as the R&D drive could be sustained without causing additional burden on the fiscal. And given the experience of Taiwan, we believe the robotics sector will be a key beneficiary in the silvering economy from a supply side perspective. In fact, the adoption of robotics has already been quite prevalent in the industrial sector, such as the production for automobiles and electronics. But the service sector is also catching up rapidly, and the demand for contactless service due to COVID-19 pandemic will also accelerate this trend. As of right now, the adoption of robotics has been predominantly in the logistics sector, but there's clearly room for other sectors, such as cleaning, maintenance, and medical usage. And in terms of region, the key customer behind are China and Japan. But unlike Japan, China still has a low density for usage, and that means there could be still room to go.
So after hearing about the regions aging and the differences, and of course Japan and China, and then the sectoral consequences, I just want to wrap up by bringing up a couple of ideas on why this is important. First of all, again, aging is in a way unavoidable, at least in the short run. So the best we can do is to find solutions to mitigate its impact. And that's exactly what we're doing in this report. The second thing is, what are the key conclusions, of course? I mean, how to mitigate? So what we've learned from Japan is that you certainly need to avoid that's the kind of silver democracy impact, meaning that your fiscal expenditure focuses on less productive sectors, meaning, of course, you need to spend in health and pensions, but how do you avoid that they carve out the services or the public services that would push for higher growth? Think about education or research and development. So you need to find a balance so that, in a way, you do not end up in a vicious circle, yeah, that where, you know, you spend for the elderly, which is of course welcome, but you need to think of a way where you leave room for the young generation and that productivity you need to keep the country going. The other important lesson, and we take it from China and I guess more generally, is that when you invest, and China is investing massively, so that of course helps. But the point is, you need to invest in capital intensive sectors. Because if you keep on adding excess capacity or a lot of capacity to sectors that are labor intensive, you're going to end up having a problem of rising wages, because you don't have enough labor to supply the workers for that investment. So it is important to think ahead and think what kind of economy you're going to be. On the sectoral side, economies like Taiwan show the way. It's like really specialized for sectors that won't need so many people, as I mentioned, capital intensive, but also that are akin or complementary to aging. Think about health tech, for example. Yeah, extremely important because it will reduce the cost of aging on the public finances. So in a way, I think these are the key messages I'd like to offer you. There's many more in the report, but it's all about the silver lining, what to do rather than what's the impact of aging only, because we can change that impact. That's the key point in our report, and I hope it serves policymakers in Asia, but also investors. Thank you very much for your attention.